This is James Robertson, Syncom Smalltalk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Smalltalk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008.
Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this real.
Here's John McIntosh at ESUG 2008 talking about his work on GStreamer for Sophie.
My name's John McIntosh, and most of the people in the community know who I am, but as a background, I'm the maintainer of the Squeak VM for the Macintosh, and I spent the last 4 years working along with Michael Ruger on the Sophie authoring tool. So actually, I put these slides together using Sophie. I was going to show Sophie, but it's set up for 1600 or so, and it's 600 by 800 screen doesn't really let you work with the Sophie tool for display. So I'll just show the PDF. What I currently have in progress, since I finished with Sophie earlier this spring, is that I've been working on a Squeak VM on the iPhone, and that was, it's actually through some help and financing from the ESUG, so I have to thank them for that. And that's going to become the base for a complete rewrite for the Macintosh version of the source code for 10.5 and post 10.5, because Apple is moving away from legacy code that they've had for the last 20 or 30 years, or is it 40 years? I think you kind of feel old sometimes when you get up in the morning.
Well, we know we have to be younger than small.
Well, yes. So actually, I should probably say next week, Michael Ruger and I will probably release the source code for the VM, for the iPhone, to let people who are iPhone developers access to the source code, so that they can do this. Actually, anyone can actually get Apple's SDK in theory then, suffer through VM Maker, and then build a VM and be able to run it on the simulator. You can do that without having to pay Apple any money. But if you want it on your device, you have to pay Apple money. But I'm sure there are people here who'll figure out how to avoid that tax. So we'll make an announcement probably next week. Michael's traveling this week after ESUG and is not able to set up the web component that he needs to oversee that. But let me talk about GStreamer. This work was actually funded by Viewpoints Research. They provided some funding to take GStreamer, which is an open source, I think it's GPL licensed code base, which lets you create graphs of objects. So it's, if people are familiar with data flow architectures, this basically is the type of environment you work with. The interesting thing about it, there's really non-obvious uses for it. You first start thinking about, I have a video or audio file or both that you want to play, and then you play it to the device, but then later on you realize that, oh, you know, I can actually like pull a file from the internet and write it to the file system, so you can abuse the tool in interesting ways that has nothing to do with audio or video because of the support that the basic components give you. When you look at GStreamer, there's code elements, there's the base is good, bad, and ugly. What you'll find is that this code base is written for the base GStreamer environment, which is the approved environment on the old PC. And I mention that because when you load up the architecture, people then say, well, I want to play MPEG and other type of codexes. But you don't find the codexes in the base GStreamer environment. So you have to go hunting on the internet for these other codecs that let you play the kind of media that people want to deal with. And I mentioned the thing in terms of the funding. The reason it's based is because we're just supporting OGG. And I think people will realize that OGG is, I think the only open source unencumbered format that I'm aware of for doing video and audio. Where we sit, I believe the people at Quack have been working on a Windows version. There's an issue for the Macintosh OS X version where we need someone on the Unix side to help build a standalone installer. Right now you can actually install ViewStreamer on your Mac if you're willing to sit with one of the package managers and install about 150 packages. It works almost flawlessly, except for the 4 or 5 times you have to fix a package or two to get it installed. It is available on the old PC, and in theory it's available on the Linux system. Probably most Linux systems have a GStreamer package. You can just do package add or an RPM on that. In terms of the licensing, it's licensed under the MIT license, so people are welcome to go to Squeak Source and then pull the packages. If you want to make changes to the base, then you can email me and we'll look at incorporating changes into the base. In terms of the plugin side, it's not actually a full implementation of the GStreamer architecture. The GStreamer class library is immense, and we only really have a subset which lets us decode video, decode audio, and also it lets us encode audio and video too. So it took about 100 primitive calls to make that work. I originally wrote it for 32-bit systems. If someone wants to actually do, you're going to need 64-bit. People here would like to volunteer. I think the people who have been working with 64-bit can appreciate you have this issue of 32 and 64-bit Squeak VMs and images and so forth, and how difficult that is to build and to manage. But certainly altering the environment so that it works in a pure 64-bit Squeak VM and image is quite doable. Most of the code is in Slang. There's a very little piece of code that's C-based, which basically lets you push data into a fake GStreamer element and pull data. I've also adhered to having an SUnit for each publicly exposed API, so you can click your test button and see what happens once you've built the plugin. In terms of the architecture, I have a proto object, a GStreamer object, which maps to a GStreamer object in the C++ library. What you'll find is GStreamer is actually quite object oriented. It also uses a garbage collector, so it does its own internal garbage collection, which proved to be an issue in the implementation because on the Smalltalk side, we are mirroring each GStreamer C object with a Smalltalk object. So we have to make sure that when we release the Smalltalk object, it releases the C object. But also, there's some shortcuts where, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, where if I have a GStreamer pipeline, for example, when I release the GStreamer pipeline, the C object sends releases to all the components that are making up that pipeline. And so if I then attempt to send release messages to those C objects when I finalize the Fee Streamer pipeline in Smalltalk, then it's going to crash. And so, as I mentioned, we have to be careful not to have this double free situation. So there is an inheritance tree that I painfully created on the Smalltalk side that ensures. How many people are familiar with finalization? How many people want to know what that means? Yeah, there's a few people that want to know what that means. If that's the old Smalltalkers here can have a nap, and I'll try to remember if I can say it correct. Finalization is what can happen is a Smalltalk virtual machine can tell the Smalltalk code that a Smalltalk object that you had is about to die or has died, and that is useful in this situation because if I'm using a Smalltalk object which is mirroring a C object and it goes out of scope and it gets garbage collected, then I get this event that tells me, hey, that object was garbage collected, do you want to know, do anything about it? And at that point I can say, well, yes, actually I need to deal with the C object that I allocated, so I need to tell the C object to go away. So that's where finalization comes in. There is another component called resurrection, which is a fairly horrifying thing where you say, oh yes, I did actually just throw away that Smalltalk object, but actually I want it back because I didn't really mean to throw it away. So I always think when people have code like that, they need to rethink their business process somehow. Because you did ask them to throw it away. So I put this slide up. This is a warning in terms of, I think this is where the complexity of if you're going to add new components, because as I mentioned, I only have about 100 primitive calls, and there are lots of other little pieces of gritty detail in GStreamer that I don't actually expose, but someone may, for example, need that for their particular usage of GStreamer. So, in GStreamer, we talk about this concept of an element. It's really a superclass, GElement, and it's either a source or sink or both. So, for example, a source, it can be a microphone or a camera, and then on a sink, it can be the display or a speaker, but it can be both. So, for example, I have this volume where audio comes in as a sink, but it comes out the other side as a source. But it's been altered, or maybe not altered, by the elements in the middle. So I have some Smalltalk code there in italics, which you can see where I call the element factory. The target element is an item called volume. You actually refer to objects by their names. And in a GStreamer system, there's some Unix commands that you can use to find all the objects in the GStreamer system that you've installed. Because the way the system is designed is you install the base system and then you start adding all these additional elements. Also, in the Smalltalk side, of course, there is a way that you can ask the system to list all the elements for you. But in this case, I create volume. I have to give it a name because we need to be able to identify it by an alias. And later on, we can use that alias to find the object again. And this is actually from a yes unit check. So it actually does self-should here and checks to see if the handle is same. And that's actually a handle to the C object, so it's basically confirming that the element was created correctly. So when we create this element, what happens is that we then put it into a pipeline or bin. The concept here is that you have a pipeline which data flows from left to right in this mesh of elements. And once you put an element into a pipeline, you then actually have to hook it up. So you have to basically do more programming in order to indicate how the data flows between the elements. And how that's done is that there's a thing called a pad on element. So you also have this complexity of a pad can be static, which means it's always there, or a pad can be dynamic, which means it's created at runtime. So for example, the volume guy here would have a pad for input and a pad for output. But what the OGG decoder, for example, has a dynamic pad where once the decoder is woken up, it creates a video output or creates the audio output or creates both. So there's a bit of some automatic hookup that can happen, and add more complexity to this type of work. You can ask a pad for its type or its capabilities, and it actually returns a MIME string indicating what the pad supplies, if it's a source, or what it consumes as if it's a sink. And so you get the situation where it can return multiple. So for example, if it was dealing with video, if this video card would return, as you can see, it returned a fairly restrictive set of settings. But on a different video device, it could give me a much broader range of settings. The interesting thing about pads is you can actually tell the pad, you can give the pad a request to say, oh, you really only understand 640 by 480. So that then, that information then is programming gated to the element. And then it also restricts what you would get out of source. If I've lost anyone, you're free to jump in and ask a question. Odd example here about we're going to play back a tone from a tone generator. What you'll find is if you just go out and look for GStreamer elements, you're going to find a variety of elements created by people all over the world to do interesting things. So for example, someone said, hey, I need a tone generator. So they created an element that generates tones, which of course then you can feed frequency and the waveform description and all sorts of information into. But in this case, I'm just going to create the element, call it source. There's a little black box thing here called audio convert, which is going to take up the role of converting the audio source. One of the interesting things about audio, there's all sorts of different formats in terms of what audio should be. Should it be a floating point number? Should it be an integer? What's the precision? What's the range? All of those type of things. And so this audio convert sits in the middle and actually negotiates with the parties on either side to figure out the best conversion based on what audio test source can do and what the audio device is going to do. But I'm also going to insert a volume in here so I can control the volume. And then we create a sync, which talks to the platform's ALSA. What does that stand for? Who knows that acronym? It's one of these acronyms.
Linux Sound Architecture.
Linux Sound Architecture? Yeah, okay. I think it's a particular hardware specification. But as you can see here, I create the pipeline, and then I add in the different elements. And of course, you can have a helper method. I do have some helper methods where you can add elements together and have them automatically link together. But I show this as an example of kind of the basic type of programming that has to go on under the covers. Here's where you do the linking, for example. So you say link A to B and B to C. That's the easiest case. Once it's linked up, the pipeline has state, so it's either in null state. It'll be in null state at this point, but then it can be in, I can send a claim, and hopefully it'll go to play state versus, and I'm showing here actually, it can go to error state, which is a bad thing. And so in this case, we actually play the sound for 1 second. It's actually asynchronously because the GStreamer environment actually looks after all the issues to do with threading for you and asynchronously managing video and audio. So I set this pipeline to playing, it's playing in the background. And I wait 1 second and then I set it to pause to stop it and then I set it to null so that I can release it. I used to set it to pause, but then underneath the covers it whined about the fact that I would send free objects in a pipeline that was in pause state versus null state. So seems simple, right? And of course, as I mentioned, some helper methods where I can create a pipeline and say build and link elements and initialization. And if you recall, I mentioned the issue of being able to find things. Basically, you can say find the element called, because later on you may actually need that. Because for this example, I create the pipeline, but then I actually have to change an attribute of the element. So there's a number of methods. At the lowest level here, where you say set the key to a string value, obviously you could have some sort of a double dispatch or something to say if you're going to set this location to a and it's a string object, then you should use this particular method which would resolve a particular primitive call. So we unfortunately have some evil C typing that has to go on down at the lower level at some point. I know this ginspect element, that actually basically prints the documentation for an element. So as part of building a GStreamer element, the author is supposed to respond to the GST inspect and print off documentation that helps you figure out how to use the element. So in this case, actually, what I'm attempting to do is read 1,000 buffers of data of a certain size from a file. Because I don't want to read the whole file, I just want to read a small chunk of the file. And then, of course, I set it to playing. And so let me introduce this get bus message. There's this whole concept of that there's a message bus in GStreamer, which the GStreamer objects send messages to. So they send status messages. So really, I want to sit and wait here until I have an error or I get the message EOS, which stands for end of stream. And I also have another modifier where I really only want to wait 5 seconds. So we're going to wait for 5 seconds or 1,000 buffer segments or some error happens kind of thing. I do note, the code's not quite right. It should, I should be looking for EOS or error or null or something to see what happened for the last message. So let's look at a much more complex example. I think actually I have somewhere an image running. Yes, there we are. So in this example, I'm going to, actually we don't have internet, do we have internet access in here? If I can remember how to do that in Squeak.
Someone here must know.
Someone must know. Michael's laughing because he's probably deleted that sheet. The microphone larger.
Right click on the desktop and there's an appearance menu and there's font under that.
I'm sure.
But you're going to change a few of that because it's one setting for each.
I'll leave it.
No.
I'm trying to be different in the demonstration.
So where's we going to get something like font set for Asian?
So I'm just going to take this little chunk of S-Unit, old ancient S-Unit code here and run this test selector, which it basically does this setup, AUG audio normally, and play it from an HTTP source. So this kind of gets into the power of what you're able to do. So in theory, when I play this file, it should run out to the internet and get this from the Gutenberg.org and play 5 seconds of it. And then set it to null and release. So that's actually one of the S-unit tests to confirm that this level of complexity works. The method is actually here. The interesting thing here is that this piece here, which I'm sure Neil can't read up here in the back. Yes?
You can control and zoom in, put on the Mac.
I can control...
Control and zoom in with two.
Oh yes, I can. And that's actually if you have the feature turned on. No. Let's talk to that. I know, that's a disability feature on the Mac, the operating system, and I don't remember the standing here, I can't remember what it is, but I know I have it turned on because we turned it on for Sophie just to understand how it works. I was going to talk here about this audio part. This is a typical command line, Unix command line, which says run gsm launch, set the target to this aug file, aug demux it, give it a name, run the Vorbis decoder, audio convert in OSX audio sync. So that's what it looks like on the command line. I mean, it's really short and concise, but when you have one that's a little more complex, you have to sit there for 3 or 4 minutes trying to figure out what it means. And it also has this it's kind of like APL, kind of. Not maybe a thousandth less complex, but there's probably 4 different ways to represent it on the Unix command line. But that was the... I could take this actually and paste it into a terminal session and run it, it should work. But you can see here I actually call this GNOME file services source, the aug demux, the Vorbis, the audio sync, audio convert, and hook them all together. And the other magic in here is I have this pad added, which is a bus message that we get to say that a pad was dynamically added. So at that point, we need to do this dynamically, hook the pad up. But let me just try running it. Of course, it'll never work in a demo.
This is a LibriVox recording.
Oh, it does work.
All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit...
It should stop. Yep, thank you. It's always good when this thing works. Thank you. But you can see here, I just played a file from the internet. And so that's kind of the beauty of the GStreamer environment. It lets you do these very complex things and push the responsibility of having it work to someone else. Yes. So as I mentioned, this guy here, what it would do is it would print all this fun Unix people, Linux people like this. They need to see stuff scroll by. You notice on the squeak side it did nothing, and I was kind of like, is it going to work or not? But you could actually put stuff to transcript for some other messaging subsystem if it makes you feel more comfortable. And I already talked about the fact that there's multiple ways to do it and so forth. So what I mentioned is that you've got these components, you hook them all together, and hopefully then you get sound at the back. Now, I just talked a little bit about the dynamic pad. This request for callback signal is kind of a little magic, ugly magic that has to happen because when you start the pipeline playing, the Demux runs off and figures out what the file is, and then it wants to create these tabs, but you're sitting over here in Smalltalk waiting for the pad to be created, and so you kind of have this issue because the base Squeak VM doesn't support callback to Smalltalk. And so we have a special setup where you pass in some data. So when we see the message about pad added, that we know how to interpret the pad added to be able to hook up the elements that are needed. So actually, once I've actually got it all hooked up, the other interesting thing about GStreamer is that it is time-based or database or something. You can send seek messages to the pipeline so that you can seek in seconds or seek in time. You can also seek sometimes into packets or data bytes and stuff. And you know, they've decided that you need to pass in nanoseconds as the base model for time. Also, there's seek to percent, so forth. So, given that, that let me then take the original morphic player for the MPEG player, which was written by Sean Maloney, based on some work I did about 8 years ago now. And we took that and cloned that in order to come up with an OGG player for the old PC. So let me just show that. So I have an OGG file here. It's an audio file. So I'm going to start it up, and it's going to take 4 or 5 seconds to start because if there's a bug where when we start it up, we don't know what it is because it says .ogg, and an OGG file can be either audio, video, or both. And so we kind of hang out around for 5 seconds trying to figure out if this file's got audio or video. And it doesn't have video, so therefore it errors. But if I wait long enough, it should bring up a little blue morphic player, and it should let me then play this OGG file.
This is a LibriVox recording.
And of course, then we can, think through it.
Other vessels of still great science.
And quit. So you can see it behaves the same as the MPEG player. I should mention, of course, if someone has the desire, they could load the GStreamer MPEG player and then do a little bit of work here to play MPEG 4 or some other type of video type in Squeak. Because let me just try this one, which is video and audio. So I grabbed this one because the Linux, for this particular conference, they made OGG files available. So the issue is where you get your OGG files from. So, does anyone know this guy? I showed this actually to someone and they actually knew who this guy was. So. But you can see it's not too bad.
Just give him the timing.
Oh, come on here. Actually, I could rotate this if you want, because it, yes?
Who's keeping the timing? Is it Squeak, or GStreamer, or?
Oh, GStreamer is keeping the timing. I haven't done I haven't done any research in terms of the quality. Basically, what's going on here is that there's a fake sync element which signals a semaphore, a Squeak semaphore. So we're basically sitting here waiting for the next frame to appear. And when the next frame appears, then we then bled it to the to morphic. But you can see that it looked pretty good.
Do you know if it has any native thread?
Oh yes, it runs pthreads. There's a whole pthread architecture behind it. And they have an element, for example, called Q, which is actually sets up a pthread interface. asynchronous interface. So I set up the pthread and I use a queue object in order for this to all work. And actually, I don't get the audio data to Squeak because I decided, well, it's a waste of time for GStreamer to decode the audio, give it to me, and then I give it to the sound system through the Squeak VM. So I just actually set up the stream to say, you play directly to the sound hardware and bypass Squeak completely. And so GStreamer is responsible for the synchronization of the sound and the video too. So it actually, under the covers, is doing all this time management and synchronization for you. And so that's one of the benefits of using this versus rolling your own type of system. As I jump to saying that you can use Squeak as a sync for source, so there are some hookup methods that you can take a look at that basically let you give audio or video data to Squeak or take audio or video data from Squeak. I'll admit, actually, there's still work to be done on using Squeak as a source for audio and video. But is anyone interested in doing that, by the way? Okay. So, if someone wants to work on that, that would be really great. So, I have done stuff where you generate some sound from Squeak and send it into GStreamer. The interesting thing then is you can then actually, you know, do encoding. If you have an encoder from somewhere, like the OGG one, then you can build your own OGG files from generated Squeak audio and video. It's an exercise for the reader. So I don't have a working example. There's some other things in GStreamer that I haven't looked at. There's this whole playband guy, which some fellow decided that he would tackle the whole issue of if I took an arbitrary media file and then I had an arbitrary playback device, you should be able to just feed the three components together and Playband should figure out all the complexity of that. I was using it a little bit, and it seemed to work, but it's actually broken on the OLPC, so I don't have an example which works. But someone could figure out how to get that to work on any other type of Linux or Windows platform. So I think that's it. Do you have any questions?
Well, I hope you enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008, held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, the Smalltalkers group at Ning. You can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.